Welcome to the Dr. Drew Podcast. Thank you very much, Chris Laxamana. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. I know this may not be up around Thanksgiving, but we have to be recording this around Thanksgiving. Again, to support everybody that supports the pods, click through on the Amazon banner. Don't forget to support the various the people that support the podcast to make it possible for us to do this. And we try to select our the companies that we work with very carefully. So we do appreciate you being a part of that. Do check out drdrew.com. We have a lengthy series there about the opioid crisis. It's like a 17-part series, and it starts all the way back into prehistory and brings it forward. And you see that we take you through the two major opioid epidemics in this country. I'm also putting that out as an audiobook, so look for that. And then keep an eye out for the narcissism series that is coming soon. And do check out the Instagram, Dr. Drew Pinsky, and I'm doing some live Instagrams there where you can ask questions live if you wish. But today I'm privileged to welcome Dr. Robert Flannery. He's the founder and CEO of Dr. Rob Farms. Dr. Rob, welcome. Explain what you do here. This is an interesting project.
Thank you so much. I sincerely appreciate you having me on the pod today.
It's, you bet.
Like you said, I'm the founder and CEO of Dr. Rob Farms, which is a cannabis company.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing right now. That's the new Bitcoin.
That's the new hotness. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. Well, I find myself in an interesting position in this industry. I am the first PhD in the United States that I know of working in commercial cannabis production that has the expertise to do so.
So you're a botanist?
Yes. So my PhD is in plant biology with an emphasis in environmental horticulture and a specific expertise in hydroponic crop optimization for cut flower production and controlled environment agriculture from UC Davis.
And other than cannabis, what gets into controlled environment farming?
You know, pretty much all of floriculture. Cannabis just really is
flora?
Floriculture, yeah.
So flowers?
Flower production, yeah.
Oh, I always thought that was imported.
No, a lot of them are. Yeah. I did – majority of my PhD research was on roses and chrysanthemums.
Oh,
and my wife really loves that, by the way.
Chrysanthemums, that's awesome. That's hysterical.
You know, honestly, cannabis grows fairly similarly to chrysanthemum. However, cannabis likes a little bit warmer than chrysanthemum does.
Now, when you say grows, you're not necessarily just going for growth. You're going for a certain kind of bloom? What's the technical word for what you're
– Yeah, absolutely. Cannabis, we're interested in the female flowers.
Yeah, the flowers.
All right. The cannabis plant itself is it's called dioecious, and that means it has separate male and female plants. And so we're only interested in the female plants because those are the female flowers produce that resin, right? The terpenes and the cannabinoids.
Do they need to interact with the male plant in order to produce any of that?
You want these females to be as sex starved as possible.
Right.
You do not want a pollination event. As soon as you have a pollination event occur, then terpene and cannabinoid production halts. And
yeah, so that turns into a fruit or something.
Exactly right. You know, this is an angiosperm. So angiosperm just means a flowering plant and it does produce a fruit. However, the fruit.
Gymnosperms are the pines.
That's exactly right. You know, ginkgo biloba is also another gymnosperm, although people don't like. I don't know if you've ever seen the little plant trivia, by the way.
Yeah.
The people say this for the fruit, and I'm using quotation marks right now with fruit. It's actually not a fruit. It's actually a seed. But the fruit of a ginkgo biloba, ginkgo is very similar to cannabis in the sense that it is also dioecious, so there are separate male and female plants. However, the female plants produce a seed that has a unfortunate aroma. It produces a compound called butyric acid.
This is ginkgo now we're talking
This
about
is ginkgo, yeah. And butyric acid has the smell of vomit. So typically when you see a ginkgo in the streets, it's the male plants. But we see the same thing in cannabis. We're only interested in the female plants unless you're doing breeding.
What is the plant trying to do with that vomit smell?
You know, I'm not sure.
Is it lilacs?
Well, you know, it's interesting because you know this is it's a wind pollinated plant, so it's not trying to attract pollinators. And you know, this is the seed.
It's just trying to protect itself. Then
you know, I'm not exactly sure. As you well know, there's no real direction to evolution, and it might just be a byproduct of. You know, there may not be a use to it.
True. There could be just byproduct. But typically it's to reproduce or to protect.
Yep.
Or to somehow otherwise push forward the genes.
Yep, exactly right. And, you know, that's kind of in the cannabis world, you know, why does that plant produce these cannabinoids and why does it produce these terpenes?
Any theories?
some of the hypotheses that out there are that, you know, I'm not sure I believe in this one or if I subscribe to this hypothesis, but it might be an anti-herbivory.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. So you don't eat it.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're a cattle out there and you're a pot plant, the cows won't eat you, or they'll eat you once and then they won't eat you again.
You know, it's, a lot of people say, like, oh, you know, if you're in a highly competitive situation and, you know, you've got predators coming down on you on all sides,
it's
and
something.
If you are somewhat medicated after eating some cannabis.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. There's a bunch of – I've read other theories like that for other plants. And one of the interesting things about psychoactive plant products on mammals is 10-20% of the mammals always go back.
Yeah.
They go for more.
Yes.
So although they repel 80%, they have 10 or 20% that go consume a lot of it.
Well, I mean, I think you know human the human psyche much more than I do. And I think, you know, your experience in addiction, as an addiction specialist and whatnot, it's – yeah, I mean, love this stuff.
I'm trying to figure out what to do. I'm just watching the data very carefully.
Yeah.
I just can't figure out when to throw the switch on – enthusiastically endorsing.
Gotcha.
I can see that it's looking good. I can see there's lots of good reports and stuff. Just I don't know. We don't have enough time yet to really know what consequences there might be that are untoward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a scientist. You know, I'm a nerd.
Same here.
I don't look the part, but I am a nerd. But I want to see science. I want
everything I do. As soon as we get the science, then we'll just go, okay, well, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I want evidence-based decision-making.
I think when the day's done, we're going to have to figure out the patients, not the medicine.
Yeah.
In other words, we have to figure out how to select the right patient for the right medicine, which is generally a conundrum in medicine.
I agree with that. And that's one of the things that we actually – there is a company that I'm aware of that is trying to match, you know, the genotype of the human to the genotype of the cannabis plant.
And that might be a breakthrough that then gets used in other pharmaceutical settings.
I 100% agree.
Yeah.
You know, the one big difference here is you know, if you're taking an aspirin, that's generally one active ingredient.
Yeah.
But with cannabis, you know, there are 113 known cannabinoids. It looks like the University of British Columbia may have just discovered another 21. This just happened last month.
So that means 135?
Yeah.
Well, what do we do with that? Now, it seems like a lot of the companies that are distributing cannabis are trying to narrow the spectrum. For instance, our CBD, obviously.
Yeah.
But even within the cannabinoids generally, aren't they trying to sort of at least have one predominant molecule?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you think about it, it's go with what you know. And everyone knows about THC. And CBD is the second largest concentration cannabinoid found in cannabis. And so people are starting to explore
THC
that more.
And CBD.
Yeah. And, you know, but, you know.
And by the way, in terms of adverse effects, it could be one of the other 130 that are the problem.
Exactly.
Okay. The addictive potential. Who the hell knows? Or maybe one is more anti-pain and one is more anti-anxiety.
Oh, absolutely. You know, CBN is, we've come to find it, you know, it's a smooth muscle relaxer and it's definitely something that helps you go to sleep. And, you know, we're finding that, you know, THC, in all honesty, the plant actually doesn't produce THC. It produces a compound called THCA.
Hmm.
And so this is that A stands for acid. And so there's a carboxyl group on the end of that THC. And so you have to decarboxylate that THCA for it to be active. Otherwise, it's not going to engage that CB1 receptor.
Do we do that or does that?
We do that by heating it up.
Oh,
so smoking, vaporizing, or cooking.
And is it cooked in an edible?
Yes, exactly right. Yeah. So, you know, if you're going to be creating an edible, you have to cook that.
Decarboxylating by heating. Okay, got it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you're removing that carboxyl group on the end, that COOH.
Just basic organic chemistry.
Exactly right, which I'm now having flashbacks to my undergrad days.
That's why I had to close my eyes and think about it. So.
Yeah, but it's, you know, there are so many things that we don't know. But the things that we do know about are, you know, THC primarily. This is a compound, if memory permits, was first discovered in Israel in the 60s. So we've known about it for a long time.
Right.
And however, you know, there's this entourage effect of what cannabis and the medicine it produces inside, or the compounds, I'll say, that it produces inside that plant that really provide the benefit. You know, we tried using a THC isolate as a medicine back in the early 90s or so. It was a drug called Marinol.
Yeah, we used to prescribe it all the time
for
nausea and for appetite.
Yeah, and we've come to realize it's just not as effective as just consuming the cannabis plant.
It wasn't effective and no one liked it.
Yeah, exactly.
No one liked it.
Yeah.
But some people responded, though. Some people had the desired effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. You know, it is a complex compound. It's a complex plant as well. Fairly benign plant, though,
And then we've had, you know, molecules that we use to block some of the things, some of the endocannabinoid system?
Well, CBD is actually one of those. It's an antagonist of THC. So it actually – I'm going to talk to you because I know you know what I'm talking about. And this is really nerdy talk, so please forgive me.
Well, I'll stop you and explicate as we go along.
There we go. Right. So CBD acts as an allosteric – well, basically a negative allosteric modifier on the CB1 receptor.
Okay. So CB1 is in the brain, and mm-hmm. CB1 is sort of what we think is sort of what makes us high. It's a neuroregulator. It's a neuron regulator. It's a very strange position in the mm-hmm. in the brain where it regulates.
Yep.
Probably affects different people differently.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that exactly binds to the receptor, the endocannabinoids receptor,
mm-hmm.
but it's a partial agonist?
So what it does is, you know, the CBD is being an allosteric modifier. It doesn't attach the binding site where THC binds to on CB1. It attaches elsewhere. But it changes the conformation right. of that CB1 receptor, making it basically nearly impossible for THC to bind to it. And so, you know, THC by itself actually is a very strong anti-inflammatory. THCA is twice the anti-inflammatory of hydrocortisone. But as you know, I know, it's crazy. 20 times the anti-inflammatory of aspirin.
That makes sense.
Yes. So it's a strong anti-inflammatory by itself.
Same system, that cyclooxygenase system.
It's a different system. I'm gonna blank on this. Now you have to remember, I'm a plant physiologist by training.
I'm trying to pull out my stuff, but I'm not a plant physiologist.
It's my understanding there's a biosignal pathway that is outside the endocannabinoid system mm-hmm. that is affected and that causes that anti-inflammatory effect.
So it's a downstream anti-inflammatory effect.
That is my understanding, yes.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But
so we're back to CBD. I didn't know the CBD blocked the binding of THC. That's interesting.
It does. It's an antagonist to it. And so that means that you can get smaller doses you can get larger doses of THC without the euphoric effect if you have CBD present with it. So you can get some of the medicinal value of it without feeling that euphoria or that high. So a lot of people find that valuable.
That's interesting. And the medicinal value we're looking for is?
You know, typically it's anti-inflammatory, it's antioxidant. One thing that we've come to realize, or we have seen some studies at NIH, is in combination THC and CBD do have some anti-cancer properties. Of course, I want to see more research.
Yeah, I mean
who doesn't?
Tommy Chong says, it cures cancer. I'm like, okay, Tommy. maybe someday.
Well, we have seen some evidence to suggest that it will kill breast cancer cells and glioma.
Now, that's been around for a long time.
Correct.
That data.
Yeah.
And yet I've never seen any real in vivo stuff.
Exactly right. These were done in petri dishes, more or less.
Yeah.
And and it does require very high doses.
Right.
But some people don't mind that at all.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
But, yeah.
All right. So let's keep going.
Yeah.
On the plant side. So mm-hmm. What is it? I mean, I don't really understand the products that are out there so much.
Yeah.
The sativa and the purple kush and all this stuff. It's all mysterious to me.
Yeah.
What are we talking about there biologically? What are the different molecules that are more prominent in these things?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you just mentioned sativa. Mm-hmm. And so this is definitely a big area of interest in the industry. People talk about the sativa versus indica versus hybrid, and these are the
why is it of interest?
The reason why is because if you consume a sativa strain, and I mm-hmm. say strain with quotation marks again, because technically we call it strains of bacteria. For plants, it's a cultivated variety or cultivar. So a cultivar that is in the category of sativa, when you consume that
– I mean, it's not really a subcategory. It's just sort of a branch of –
Yeah, so it's not a species per se. It's kind of
almost a
variety.
Yeah.
So a varietal.
Yeah.
You know, we see this, you know, in the, for example,
roses.
Yeah, my PhD research on roses was on Rosa hybrida, and then it's called Cardinal. Cardinal is the cultivated variety. That's just that deep red rose that everyone likes to get on Valentine's Day. Now, for cannabis, it would be something like, cannabis sativa, and there's a lot of people who feel that cannabis sativa is actually the only species in cannabis outside of ruderalis, which is another non-resinous type of species found native to Russia, of all places. But cannabis sativa, and then you have the varieties of that tend to fall in this more sativa versus indica field. So the sativa cultivars, give you that uplifting feel. You know, you're energetic, you're creative, you want to write music, things like that.
Do we know what's going on with which molecule and what it's doing?
We do to some extent, and it's actually more related to terpenes than it is cannabinoids. And so if you look at the types of terpenes that are found in the sativa cultivars, alpha pinene, limonene, and I'm guessing you guys can all guess what alpha pinene smells like.
Oh,
pine.
Wow.
And,
but I have no idea. Those are not molecules I can even envision. So I'm not, where do they bind? What do they do? Do we know?
Well, one thing that they do is they're bronchodilators.
All right.
And so, like, if you go into a pine forest and take a deep breath, you just feel kind of invigorated.
Sure. It's like eucalyptus oil.
Exactly. You know, these are bronchodilators. And so a lot of people feel as though that that sativa effect has more to do with the bronchodilation than anything else.
Oh, okay.
So then the indica is the, you know, those are the types of cannabis plants that, you know, give you what a lot of people call couch lock, where you feel like you're locked to your couch. You don't want to do anything.
Yes.
But it's very good for cancer patients. Helps people go to sleep when, you know, they're going through chemo and things along those lines, which I mean, is immensely beneficial. And
which one is good for pain?
Also indica, typically. And because part of the reason why that is you have terpenes such as beta-caryophyllene and linalool, which is found in lavender. That's what gives lavender its aroma. These are smooth muscle relaxers, and so they are relaxants.
And that's not, at least not prominent in the sativa.
That is not as prominent in sativa. Okay. Now, the number one terpene we find in cannabis is a terpene called myrcene. It's also a terpene that's we find in mango, especially really ripe mango. One thing that we've interestingly found is that myrcene actually increases the transmission rate of the cannabinoids across the blood-brain barrier.
Hmm.
And so you can actually take a smaller dose of THC or CBD or whatever you're medicating yourself with if you consume myrcene about 60 to 90 minutes before you medicate.
Is myrcene or other terpenes in banana?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. A lot of the aromas that we get from plants are terpenes or esters that. And things like that.
A friend of mine is very – well, he's been on the show, Dr. Dan Siegel. Mm-hmm. I'm not speaking out of turn saying the story. Last Dan Siegel episode, Gary, if you can come up with that.
It was – is it possible he hasn't been back since 2014?
Nope.
Nope. 2016. That sounds right. Yeah, 252.
Mm-hmm. I think there was one since.
350.
There you go.
Sorry. You. They're coming up kind of in reverse order. My mistake. 104, 252. 350.
I've heard recently some people came up to me out of the blue to talk about how much they enjoyed that last one with him.
Yeah, he was great.
He told me a story once where he took an overripe banana, he took a bite of it, and he walked away and he became acutely suicidal.
Really?
Yeah. And suicidal thinking can be independent of mood, everything. Yeah. It's a separate biology in some people.
Like an impending feeling of doom or?
An overwhelming desire to hurt himself.
Really?
Yeah. Not panic, not depression. Active suicidal ideation. And he was, you know, a psychiatrist. He went, geez, that's strange thinking.
I'm throwing all the bananas out of our house right now.
Well, then he said he'd sort of passed after an hour or so.
Yeah.
And he went back to seek out that banana, try it again. Same thing happened.
That's so weird.
And so I'm wondering if there's terpenes that, you know, have
you know, there, I know
that's going to be an interesting area of research.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there are so many of them too. I mean, I do know that with banana, I believe that the compound isopentyl acetate is what gives the banana that banana aroma.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the only reason why I remember that is because in high school we did that in AP chemistry class and it was a lot of fun. But my knowledge of banana physiology is pretty limited.
Well, you've just enlightened me that at least there's a candidate sort of molecule series there in terpenes.
Potentially, yeah.
Describe what terpenes are and do. What how they structure, what do they look like?
So terpenes are these are basically hydrocarbons. They have a for example, the majority of the terpenes that we associate with the aroma and flavor of cannabis are monoterpenes. So they have one.
Is it large molecule?
They're fairly large. I mean, you know, so one of the things I always like to say, because part of what our company does is we do optimization for cultivation. We'll actually go in there and manage a grow. And one of the things I always talk about is like, listen, you got to think about this plant as a little factory. And, I know a lot of people in the cannabis industry like to think of the plants as their daughters and things like that, which is perfectly fine. You know, it's one of those things where, like, if you sing to your plant, chances are you're also giving the right fertilizer and things like that. It's more correlation than causation.
I understand.
But we have to think of these plants as little factories. And THC is a 21 carbon molecule. So it's a diterpene. So it's also a terpenoid.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And it is expensive for that plant to make. So, you have to do things to boost up that raw material, that CO2 that comes in, things along those lines. But yeah, these are big molecules.
Explain to people what he means by expensive. It means biologically expensive. It takes a lot of energy and a lot of biochemistry in the plant, a lot of different mechanisms to put the thing together.
100%. Yeah. So, in a plant physiology standpoint, we always talk about a carbon budget. And so, where carbon goes to in the plant. And, I want to try to promote as much of that carbon going to that flower, producing the terpenes, producing that THC.
Have there been breakthroughs, this sort of sentinel breakthroughs in how you make that happen?
Yeah. So, you ever heard of Le Chatelier's principle? This is going to be going back to your old chemistry days.
No,
probably
I remember
in high school.
It. I just don't remember what it was.
So Le Chatelier's principle.
It's an energy flow.
It's for chemistry.
Yeah.
And it's basically the more raw ingredient I put in, the more product I'm going to get on the other end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now, granted, there's a lot of in betweens. This is not just a simple chemical equation, but what the chemical equation for photosynthesis essentially is CO2 plus water. CO2 plus water gives you sugar, glucose.
Plus light.
And oxygen.
Plus the light.
Exactly. Plus that light in the middle.
Whatever that's doing.
Exactly. So if I can increase the CO2 on the front end, I should have more sugar on the back end. And so that sugar is what the plant uses for that carbon budget.
So do you pump in high levels of CO2?
You increase the CO2 concentration on the front end. And we actually work with a company that has a really interesting technology where they actually do CO2 injection for like a field crop. We saw the study done at Fresno State and UC Davis, my alma mater, they did this study with field grown tomatoes, and they saw an increase of yield of 127%.
By doing what?
By injecting CO2. This is outdoors.
The gas.
Yeah, the gas.
Inject it in the ground?
No, just around the plant. CO2 is heavier than air, so it usually will float around the plants. However, in a field, you've got gusts that come by. And so they have got some interesting technology to be able to micro-inject CO2. And even just that, we saw a big boost in the production. And one of the things I always like to say is, so the most abundant protein on the planet is called Rubisco. So that's ribulose 1,5-bisphosphate carboxylase / oxygenase. So this is an enzyme, and this is the enzyme that's primarily responsible for fixing the CO2 out of the atmosphere. But if you noticed
– we should be using that for carbon footprints.
But I thought the climate change wasn't a real thing, though.
Climate change may or may not be, but there's lots of CO2 hanging around.
That's right. No, I fully believe what the scientists tell us. The 98% of climate scientists tell us. So,
well, my thing with climate is I don't care if we perfect our ability, how we produce CO2. None of the other countries are going to do it. We got to figure out how to get it out of the atmosphere.
100%. So sequestration is a fantastic way.
This is a molecule. I would be like, well, let's think what we can do with this.
And this is an enzyme that's found in algae as well. So this is the majority of photosynthesis on the planet is actually happening in the oceans by microalgae. Hmm. And so this is where we should be really focusing on. 70% of the planet is ocean.
Yeah.
There's a lot of microalgae that's absorbing that free energy from the sun and pulling CO2 out of the atmosphere and out of the water.
So what about this enzyme?
So this enzyme, if you notice, I called it carboxylase / oxygenase. So it has a dual function. It can carboxylate that sugar, that ribulose 1,5-bisphosphate, or it could oxygenate it.
Yes. The 1,5-bisphosphate.
Yep.
That's the most common molecule?
No. The enzyme is.
Okay.
Yeah. So ribulose 1,5-bisphosphate is a sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that is the substrate that Rubisco comes in and attaches the CO2 to. However, it can also attach an oxygen to it.
Okay.
Well, if it attaches an oxygen to it, that's a bad thing. It becomes a waste product at that point. The plant has to then clean it up.
Does that oxygen then become like a free radical or something?
It doesn't become a free radical, but that oxygenated sugar becomes something that the plant really can't use for, in the future. So it has to break it down.
Just useless.
Exactly. Yeah. It has to break it down, which costs energy, all this other stuff. Well, how do we control that enzyme to the point where we want to primarily do the carboxylase function as opposed to the oxygenase function? Well, as temperatures increase, that enzyme is going to be preferentially be doing the oxygenase function.
Oh, well, that's good.
No, that's
easy.
So, you can cool it down. But then again, this is an organism that can't control its own metabolism unless, we control it by the temperature more or less.
So heat, CO2, and then the kind of light?
Light does not affect this. This is light independent. This is the light independent part of photosynthesis.
But I'm wondering if you, adding a certain kind of light helps you in this production process.
You know, I'm not too sure about this specifically, but definitely there is something to be said about the quality of light that plants get. And, you know, historically, cannabis is grown, you know, indoors, and we're using artificial light. Although there is a place for that in the marketplace, there's something to be said about that natural light. There's more than just, you know, the P680, P700. Those are the photoreceptors that drive photosynthesis. There are other receptors out there that drive many other things. And I'm actually currently in the process of writing a white paper to describe some of these things. And part of the reason why the way we cultivate and what we do is we try to utilize as much of that sun as possible to really drive a lot of these other photoreceptors that have benefits to the plant.
I had a professor in college, and this was not my thing, but I watched him a lecture. I was 20 or something.
Yeah.
And his thing was how the chloroplasts use light.
Mm-hmm.
And he was breaking it down. It's almost like becomes a quantum physics type thing that you can never find exactly where it's turning light into
exactly
the energy.
Yeah.
And I just wondered if that was part of what, you know, the conundrum you guys are trying to deal with.
Well, you know, this is an organism that likes a lot of light. Mm. It's very similar to tomato in the sense if I give tomato 1% more light, you typically get 1% more yield. Cannabis is the same way. Typically, though, the limiting factor is CO2 on the front end. So if I can increase the CO2 around that plant, the plant's going to, you know, this is Ohm's law. You know, we're talking about the flow of CO2 into the leaf. You've got resistance. And you've got the voltage in Ohm's law for CO2 is the concentration of CO2 inside the leaf versus the concentration of CO2 on the outside. So if we increase that differential, that flow rate is going to increase. And so what's nice about that too is if I increase that flow rate, the plant can close the pores. The pores on the plant are called stomata.
Right. There's all leaves have little pores for that.
100%. Yep. And you know, because the plant has to it cools itself off by evaporative cooling, basically by, you know, the water evaporating, but also it needs to get that CO2 inside the plant to do that photosynthesis. And so if you've got a higher flow rate of CO2 into the leaf, you can keep your plant or your pores closed more often, and you lose less water. So your water use efficiency actually goes up.
Hmm.
One thing that's interesting too. So you know, as we all know, that the cannabis industry uses a lot of energy. Well, you know, part of that is cooling the greenhouses or cooling the indoor facilities. Now, granted, there's something to be said about outdoor, which I'm a big fan of.
Well, let me ask two questions about that. Mm-hmm. Why are people not doing more outdoor? And two, I thought you said you wanted it to be warm in there.
Exactly. And so you want it to be warm because you want to drive the respiration rate. But that's also driving the possibility of that carboxylase function on Rubisco.
Uh-huh.
So you can counteract that with higher CO2 concentrations. But, you know, I'm a big fan of outdoor production because the cost to the environment.
Why aren't they doing that more?
Because this is a plant that you're going to get one to maybe three harvests a summer. If you are going to be growing that in an outdoor setting, if I'm doing a controlled environment agriculture, if I'm in a greenhouse, I can get five, maybe six grows a year. The margins and the wholesale value of that product is valuable enough to do that. And also, I'm a big fan of, you know, we're standing on the shoulders of giants. Let's not try to reinvent the wheel here.
You mean botanist, you mean?
Yeah. If you look at where's cut flower floriculture happening in the world, it's happening in greenhouses primarily. And why is that? Because the goal of horticulture, generally speaking, is uniformity. And it makes sense too here. So if I'm producing, you know, this cannabis product that has an inherent variability in the genetics of that plant, I want to control as many variables as possible. Controlled environment agriculture provides that for you.
What about controlling on the other end in terms of what you do with the molecules? Like, you know,
you can do that.
Changing them, or
you know, you can do extractions.
People doing that?
People are doing that. You can, you know, you definitely can extract the oils from the plant, and then you can isolate certain cannabinoids or terpenes or whatever you want.
Is that what I'm holding a DH, a CBD THC product? Is that what happened to give me the CBD?
Correct. So that is a distillate product, and so this, you know, if you're to do the comparison to alcohol, you know, it's the same thing as alcohol. So if I create a beer, or a wine, I can distill that down to a brand. Or, you know, mm-hmm. Beyond that. And so you know, you get that crude oil that you extract out of the plant, and then you can distill that down. You're removing a lot of the other proteins and other compounds that come along with that extraction that are just.
Are people experimenting with those to know what they're all about?
Oh my God, there's so many of them. I mean, don't get me wrong. I want to see that research.
Yeah.
But you know, where do you start? Really,
this is such a hot area. I would imagine, mm-hmm. and there seems to be such a business model attached mm-hmm. to it that I would imagine there'd be money going into it.
There absolutely is. Yeah. I'm lucky to sit on the board of advisors for a couple of investment groups, and you know, we see things like this coming through every once in a while. And it's unfortunately, it's going to take some research and some time.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
It's you know, I'm very much like Veruca Salt. I think I want it now. however, we all know that science does take time.
Yeah. But it just again, and there, science, you know, flows towards. A business determines where science directs a lot of its interest.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, there are some hurdles in this. You know, we're dealing with a plant that is federally banned. You know, so it's considered a Schedule I drug.
Is the Reese – that drives me insane.
Yeah, I know.
Just the idea of a Schedule I drug drives me insane, frankly, the whole concept.
Well, this is gonna frustrate you even more. Do you know the federal government owns a patent on using cannabis to treat multiple sclerosis?
Perfect.
Yeah, so they have – they own a patent.
They also were doing research on hallucinogens for end of life and various other psychiatric illnesses.
Yeah.
And they just decided one day that was evil.
Yeah. it's just you know, and that's actually why I don't use the term marijuana, because that was created for – primarily racist reasons to
that's
demonize.
That's a great point. History is crazy.
Oh, it's
and it's been buried.
Oh God, I you know if
tell an abbreviated version of it.
Okay, so one of my least favorite people who ever exists in American history
Richard
is
Nixon.
up there, okay. A gentleman by Harry Anslinger. He basically in the around Prohibition times. 20s and 30s started to really demonize cannabis.
He was involved in the opioid thing too.
That is my understanding as well. Yes,
he was involved in the Harrison Narcotic Act. I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just.
Yeah.
It's crazy too because I mean, and I know that you know the term LD50. So for listeners out there, LD50 is lethal dose where 50% of a sample population dies from, you know.
The dose takes to kill 50% of the people.
Exactly. And so, you know, we know what the LD50 is for water. You can die from kidney failure if you drink too much water. We know what the LD50 is for, you know, very poisonous things like arsenic and cyanide. We know what the LD50 is for sugar, for salt. We don't know what the LD50 is for cannabis.
Yeah.
And so the CB1, CB2 receptors, which are the only known receptors in the endocannabinoid system that we know of at this point, are not found in part of the brainstem that control your heart rate nor the part
no
of the
lethal
breathing
dose
rate.
We know of.
Some people have suggested that it's the LD50 of cannabis could be 150,000 grams. So, you know, I'm a big dude. 150,000 grams is still bigger than me, so I would have to smoke more than my weight.
You have to eat a gummy bear your size.
Exactly. Which, don't dare me to do that. I might try. But, yeah, so it's a benign plant. But then we have
But to be fair, it might interact with other stuff, and who knows, and we just don't know. And so, again, because no research has been done, we can't know.
Exactly.
That's what drives me crazy.
Science
when you label a molecule mm-hmm. evil,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Think about that. They took a series of molecules, uh-huh. and they said, these molecules are evil and can't be touched by humans.
When I first started my PhD work, this is literally like probably month three of my PhD program, one of the gents who was funding a lot of the research I was doing, he pulls me aside and says, you know, he's a big fan of the plant, cannabis. He says, Robbie, cannabis is illegal. However, lettuce is not. Can we do some like, you know, GMO type stuff where we get the genes from that make THC and put it into cabbage
funny.
Or lettuce
that's
or something
funny.
Like that? And I was like, that is way beyond a PhD dissertation. there's no way I could ever do that. But, you know, and also there's more than just THC in there. And it's just, that's, you know, it's crazy
but,
to say that a plant is illegal.
That kind of thing may be the future.
Taking
the genes for one of the molecule mm-hmm. production and put another plant.
We actually just saw something come through in one of the investment groups I advise. It was a group that is doing using yeast to produce the cannabinoids.
There you go.
And perfect. Hey, that's real cheap and inexpensive. You know, I don't have to build out a huge greenhouse to do it. But then again, remember, we're talking about potentially 134 cannabinoids that you want to try to address, you know. So, yeah, you can do isolates.
With yeast, you could do each one to see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Start producing them all, produce them for research.
You know, and there is benefit to consuming CBD as an isolate as well. You know, there's definitely it definitely looks as though that you have better effect if it comes in combination with THC.
But Tell me about that.
CBD by itself is a very strong anti-inflammatory. And it also has anti-anxiety properties. And, you know, once again, I'm
But that's by itself.
Yeah, just by itself.
Yeah.
You know, once again, I'm a plant physiologist, so, you know, human physiology is a little bit beyond my specific expertise.
You've been pretty good so far.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to read up on it. Uh-huh. You know, they're very similar systems, but, you know, no cell walls in humans, I've come to find out. but, you know, it does affect something
cell
else.
Cell just different.
Yeah, exactly. It's a plasma membrane, right? Yeah. Yes. You know, CBD by itself does bind to receptors outside of the endocannabinoid system that provide that anti-anxiety property.
Meaning where?
If memory permits, now forgive me, and I don't want to. I know I'll be corrected. Well, but
what I'm wondering is in like the autonomic nervous system? Or?
Yes, so yeah, it's found throughout the nervous system mostly, and also through the immune system. The CB1 receptors are found through the lymphatic system as well.
And CBD is binding at CB1?
CB2.
CB2.
Typically is what people say, but also there are receptors out there I believe if memory permits, it's GABA. Receptor that, and that's
GABA is also a neuroregulatory thing. So
exactly.
Sense,
so there's a receptor out there, and please forgive me. I just read this up the other day, and you know, how about we ask some more plant physiology questions?
Go ahead.
No, I'm just kidding. Right. But no, so, honestly, that's what it does outside the endocannabinoid system.
Let me ask some tougher sort of questions that are in the vapors right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, if you're looking for a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP, but you probably don't, like me, don't even know what it stands for. How about invoice, list price, dealer price? It's meant to be confusing. What you really want is the price you're going to pay, which actually means something. And now introducing True Price from True Car, you will know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you ever get to the dealership. True Car dealers know they know this, and they show you the True Car price on the car you want, all from the comfort of your home. How do you know the True Price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. You see that scattergram, and you lock in the price for an actual vehicle on a True Car certified dealer's lot. And the True Car certified dealers know all this, so they set their True Price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy new or used, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Well, if you're one of these people that has muscle and leg cramps, you know what I'm talking about. You come to the doctor, you demand something because you're so desperate for relief. Now you can do it yourself with TheraWorks Relief. It's available in the pain relief aisle at Walmart, CVS, Rite Aid, and Walgreens. Talk to your pharmacist. They're as enthusiastic as I am because finally we don't have to use sedating medication or dangerous medication, which we used to have to use. TheraWorks Relief is a non-greasy foam, clinically proven to relieve muscle cramps fast, reduce muscle soreness. Use it a couple times a day. You'll prevent muscle cramps with TheraWorks Relief before they ever start. You'll get a full night's sleep. You'll be able to carry out your normal activities. You'll be able to exercise. TheraWorks Relief takes only minutes to apply, absorbs quickly, and it works. I've been talking about it everywhere. I've been giving it to patients and family and friends. The reports have been fantastic. TheraWorks Relief is my choice for preventing and relieving muscle cramps. Make it yours too. That is TheraWorksRelief.com, where you can learn more. Again, that's TheraWorksRelief.com for your muscle cramps. Well, if you or someone you know is dealing with addiction, and you also know that finding a treatment center that works for you is extremely frustrating. Truth is, every patient's needs are different and evolving. Well, the folks behind True Recovery in Orange County, California, realize that effective care can't be one size fits all. And so they've developed a comprehensive range of treatments that address all facets of drug and alcohol addiction. I've spoken to their team. I'm very impressed with them. True Recovery's master level clinicians maintain small caseloads, and that allows them to personalize their care and really pay attention where they should. They offer individualized treatment plans from residential to outpatient, and it's a holistic approach. It's focusing, of course, on accountability and returning to the workforce and living your life free and sober and healthy. As patients become ready, True Recovery offers assistance with other life skills, coping skills, as I said, school, vocation, rehabilitation, as well as community reintegration support. I have spoken with them. I was impressed. Their experienced team is well-equipped to manage patients at all levels of care. To request more information on how True Recovery can provide you the personalized care you need, go to drdrew.com/true. Again, go to my website, drdrew.com/TRUE, True Recovery. Well, we always try to stay ahead of things when it comes to our health, but information is the one thing that we cannot get enough of, and that is why I'm excited
that Color.com, Color, a genetic test that's provided powerful insights into my own health. Turns out I have something called Lynch syndrome. My sons have it. We have to get more aggressive screening done. And guess what? Because the insurance companies don't want us to get these illnesses that we're prone to, they pay for the screening. Color can help you gain insights on certain cancers and heart conditions that may run in your family and whether or not you should start cancer screenings earlier or maybe get more screening at whatever age you're at. And I'll tell you what they do is they have you get one-on-one time with a Color geneticist, and they give you a huge readout, tons of information. It's very effective what they do. And the geneticist will answer all your questions until you're satisfied. The kit is sent you in the mail. You can do it. It's a spit test. You do it at home, and then you ship it back. Easy peasy. They even go above and beyond just flagging concerns. They want to be sure you really understand your biology. They help you make a plan to approach your health proactively, and they help you by notifying your physician as well. Get a guiding hand for your health journey. Color's offering $25 off for our listeners when you visit color.com/Drew. I cannot recommend this strong enough. Certainly everybody of middle age should be getting this. This would have been thousands of dollars years ago. Now it's nothing, and they are a high, high quality organization. I really am excited to be representing them. Color.com/Drew. Again, color.com/Drew.
Yeah, absolutely.
Malcolm Gladwell just came out, and you see that quote? He said, I'm fearful, essentially, I'm going to paraphrase it,
paraphrase it badly,
that we have another tobacco industry booming here. And the idea of us exposing the entire country to a molecule we don't fully understand yet scares him. He didn't say it's a bad thing. He just said this is like frightening, and didn't we learn our lesson with tobacco?
Yeah. And, you know, so one of the things that how I feel about cannabis is that this is a plant that has been consumed for millennia. Now, granted, that's not a FDA, trial. That's not a study coming out of NIH. However, anecdotal evidence does drive a lot of what science is. And so we see anecdotal evidence to suggest something. You form a hypothesis and you test that.
So on a limited basis, based on anthropological research, mm-hmm. you say limited exposure to cannabis, anthropology suggests not that big a deal.
What we have seen, I'm not saying that cannabis is all sunshine and rainbows. For the most part,
I think he was actually calling into question the dose, the concentration.
Yes,
saying with it being so potent these days, we really don't fully get that.
Yes, and so there is something called THC lock, where basically you get to a point where no matter how much THC you consume, it's no longer engaging the endocannabinoid system, and so you basically have to abstain from cannabis consumption, and it's a handful of weeks, and then you pretty much go back to being normal when it comes to your tolerance for cannabis. But one of the things I totally get that. When we were growing cannabis in the 60s and 70s, we're seeing THC potencies of 2%, 3%, 4%. The highest I've ever grown is just under 30%. And that's mostly driven by the breeding of cannabis. That's mm-hmm. almost primarily driven by the genetics. And of course, there are some tweaks here and there that you can kind of
the CO2 and the light. And
exactly. Yeah. If you understand the physiology of that plant, you can kind of manipulate it to push that a little bit harder. I personally am very big fan of pushing terpene production. I think it's kind of like wine. The active ingredient, and I say the quotation marks, in wine is ethanol. Well, I care less and more about the ethanol concentration of wine than I do care about the flavor profile and the smells. And that's what the terpenes are in cannabis. And so that's of more interest to me than the cannabinoid concentration. But I completely understand that thinking of, we're consuming cannabis that is a higher potency. And now there are different methods that people are using. There's always been extractions out there. Some of the first tinctures that we have found historically are tinctures of, alcohol tinctures of cannabis. Mm. And that's how people consumed it. But nowadays you can create, that's the whole dabbing culture is getting very potent product. Granted, it also has that aroma that goes along with it, but it's very potent. Sometimes you're seeing, some of the extractions that are 75, 95, 96% THC. Now granted, it's like taking a shot versus drinking a full beer. You take much smaller, samples. But it's sizable and it's something that someone can over-medicate quite easily. And to talk about over-medication too, it's not something that's directly going to kill you. In fact, I've got a family friend. He's I won't mention any names, but I'd like to embarrass him about this because he was kind of idiotic when he consumed some cannabis. He uh, former police officer. He had an injury on the job. He had to do a forced retirement, but he had lower back pain. And basically, his surgeon, his spine surgeon, has said that, well, if I perform this microdiscectomy, I'm giving you really a 50-50 chance of possible paralysis, just the way this is manifested. And so he chose that, you know, he's going to deal with pain. And, you know, he was popping opiates like it's candy. And, you know, as we all know, that's exceedingly dangerous. And so I gave him some edibles. You know, this is a former police officer who's never consumed cannabis in any form in his life. And I said, you know, one of the things you have to be careful with edibles is that can take sometimes 30 minutes, 90 minutes, maybe even 2 hours before you just start feeling the effects.
He just kept putting them in.
Exactly right. We gave him this candy bar, and this candy bar has 12 doses in it.
Oh, Jesus.
And I said, take off, break off a quarter of it, and then break that in half, and then consume that, and we'll see how you do.
To be fair to whoever this is,
yeah,
that's drug addict behavior.
Yeah,
but I'd much rather see him on the edibles than the opiates.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's like, okay, I'm going to take this. And he's sitting there. And at the time this happened, you know, he's by himself at his house, and so he's, you know, in a safe environment. He's going to, you know, test this out for the first time. He takes it. He's like, okay, I'm not feeling anything. 30 minutes go by, not feeling anything. 45 minutes go by. He's like, you know what? Screw this. Obviously, I have a really high tolerance. And so he takes half the bar.
Oh.
So he basically consumes 6 full doses. And his wife comes home, couldn't find him. He's in the bedroom, completely naked, crawled up in the fetal position in the corner.
Oh, jeez.
And, you know, it's not going to kill you, but it's going to make you feel really, really uncomfortable. Yeah. Basically, you know, it slows down your brain. And
well, also, they can get hallucinogenic properties later.
You know, cannabis typically does not have hallucinogenic. It has
high,
to be euphoric.
High dose.
High dose yeah. can.
And then you've seen the scrombing phenomenon yet?
Yes, I have. So, yeah.
Which is interesting, which is people vomit and – oh, Gary's like, huh? Vomiting and screaming at the same time. And it's cured by, Gary, a hot shower.
Yeah.
Don't tell your buddy about that.
Which – at Corolla?
He'll tell you need a cold shower.
Oh, jeez. I'm wondering if you have any questions you've been sitting here listening carefully.
Yeah. No, not yet. I'm fascinated by this.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Right now, I guess I'm consumed with feeling like his buddy was, because everyone's made that. A lot of people have made that mistake once.
You've done it?
Oh, yeah.
And what you, this sativa indica thing, is that something that confuses you, or can you tell the difference?
Yeah, I can. Since you've known me, I've toned it back to a much more recreational, occasional user. But in college, a lot of my friend group was very heavily into marijuana. So I have experiences with all that stuff. But, my experience when I was actually active in that community was before this stuff like dabs even came along. Like,
yeah.
I saw that for the first time about 3 years ago, and I was blown away.
And he was like, give me some of that.
No. I did one once, a club that I used to go to.
See? Give me some of that.
Any of the rules. And they just give you one as you leave.
Oh, wow.
Which is absurd. And they're like, here, take this before you go get in the car.
Oh.
I took one time, never again.
That's generally frowned upon in polite society.
Yeah. And intoxicated driving is a problem, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I had no idea what I was getting into. Those dabs are not to be messed with.
Yep.
Let me get more of your data out there. You can follow Rob at Dr. Rob, R-O-B-B, Farms. Website is Dr. Rob Farms, DRROBB. Let's see. Worked as director of SPARC. What is that? Spark.
Oh, so Spark. I was a former production director at Spark in San Francisco.
What is Spark?
Spark is, at least at the time I was there, was the largest vertically integrated dispensary in the state. And founded by a gentleman by the name of Eric Pearson, is a great individual, very much a forward-thinking individual in the space. And, you know, for the most part, cannabis shops and dispensaries were – you know, the kind of like seedy drugstore feel, or not drugstore, like even just like, you know, the liquor store. Yeah, exactly.
Drug dealer.
Yeah. So Spark was the first dispensary that really did it right. And a lot of the dispensaries we were seeing popping up really are following what Spark already did. And they're called the Apple Store of Cannabis. It's a beautiful shop. It's in San Francisco. And it was actually there when I truly discovered what cannabis can do. And I have to tell the story real quick. There's a patient at Spark.
Way, can we talk about your mom too as part of this?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, go ahead. And actually, this is a great segue.
Okay, go ahead.
So when I truly found out what cannabis can do for people, you know, it's not for everyone, but what it can do for some people.
If we could just figure out who to use it with and what and for how long, we'd have it nailed.
Well, the thing that's nice about it is you can test it out because it's not going to kill you. Unless you're going to consume 150,000 grams, 150 kilograms, then it might potentially kill you. But you can kind of experiment a little bit and see what works for you. But there was a gentleman there that he was a patient of Sparks, and he would come in every single morning, and he would go and buy an eighth of a particular cultivar called Cannatonic, which is a high CBD cultivar. And at Spark you can medicate on site. They have these vaporizers, so you can grind up your medicine and vaporize right there and walk on out and have your day. This gentleman happened to be someone who had who was high functioning autistic person. And it manifested in the inability to speak. So he could not speak. But as soon as he started consuming cannabis, he would take his first inhalation.
What was his problem?
It was some plant physiologist.
Sorry.
He had some he was a very high-functioning autistic gentleman.
I got it. Okay.
And
it
manifested as an inability to speak.
Yeah. I've heard of this happening. Actually,
yeah.
Same kind of thing.
And so it was interesting because, he would inhale. 60 seconds, 90 seconds later, all of a sudden he starts speaking. He has no speech impediment. And come to find out, this is a gentleman who does mostly contract work at NASA Goddard, Apple, Google, in Silicon Valley. But every single day, in order for him to communicate orally, he has to consume cannabis.
Crazy.
And so when I found that.
Is somebody doing fMRIs on him?
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, I mean, come on.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I mean, so when I saw that happen, I was like, okay, there's something going on here. When I was a production director at Spark, I was in charge of the entire, all things production, from maintaining the genetics for the plants, doing the cuttings and the propagation and vegging out the plants, doing the actual flower production, the post-harvest biology, the dry cure. Cannabis has to be dried and cured, very similarly to garlic, because we all know how garlic is dried and cured, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was in charge of all that. And I remember very distinctly receiving a phone call from my mom. I was in the dry cure space. At Spark, and my mom let me know that she was diagnosed with aggressive form of breast cancer. Mm-hmm. She's currently cancer-free, so she's still alive and kicking. She's with us. But when it comes to cannabis, my mom's rather naive. She went to college in the 60s, was invited to a pot party, and no exaggeration here, she thought she was going to a Tupperware showing party. So she's very naive. My parents have been married since 1972, and my dad has seen my mom inebriated, I think, two times. Mm-hmm. So she's not someone who seeks out inebriation.
Right.
But she's going through chemo and radiation. She ended up having two rounds of surgery as well. And so I said, Mom, I'm literally surrounded by a ton of cannabis in the dry cure space. I have access to product for you. And she's like, okay, but I don't want smokable, I don't want vapable, I want an edible.
Mm.
Everything I had grown that I knew was clean, that was free of pesticide, that was free of plant growth regulators, that a lot of people historically have been using in cannabis production, that's turning that medicine into poison.
And again, there's none of that in the interior, it's stuff grown inside.
There are people who use plant growth regulators and pesticides on the indoors too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get pests indoors, and sometimes it's even worse.
Okay.
And so everything I'd grown though, I knew was clean. Mm. I couldn't really source that for her, so I was going to have to source an edible outside of what I had grown. And so I'm thinking to myself, am I about to poison my mom? And that was really the birth of Doc Rob Farms. Was okay. Like, I have the technical training to grow this plant without these compounds. Some of them are suspected mutagens. I mean, there's a systemic fungicide called mycobutanol that releases hydrogen cyanide when you heat it up. Well, in order to consume cannabis, you have to heat it up. So mm. it's systemic. It's inside the plant.
Mm.
So, we see people using that all the time because cannabis is unfortunately very susceptible to fungal infection.
Mm.
So here I am thinking, okay, I gotta get an edible for my mom. Am I going to kill her?
Those are heated to be produced.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was really what I did. And so the birth of Doc Rob Farms stemmed from that. And
how did she use it? How did it work for her?
So she ended up using a chocolate edible for a company I have a lot of love for. This is Kiva Confections, and I've told the CEO of it that you helped my mom out so much. I'm always going to have a lot of love for them. They're based out of Oakland. Very good people. So she would eat the chocolate. And it would help her, especially when she's going through chemo and radiation, help her sleep.
That company does a great job of making something that is actually tasty.
Yeah, 100% correct. They
have a lot of these products, the edible ones, Drew. I don't know if you've
experienced. Tastes like shit.
They taste like pot. They taste like you're eating a gram of pot, and it's annoying. Those Kiva ones are.
See,
it's like chocolate.
I've tried CBD, but I've not tried THC or other cannabis in recent years because I got panic attacks when I was in college from it.
You know, if you consume a good amount of it, it can definitely cause that. And it's the microdosing is I'm a big fan of that because I see it as more of a wellness product than it is, you know, this is going to cure everything that I have.
Intoxicant.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's more of a – this is a wellness product. And, you know, so I actually created a product called Mom's Formula. And it's for her because after she did her chemo and radiation, she was having some anxiety issues. And so, you know, microdosing with CBD and THC.
Is that
has
what this
been,
is?
Yeah, that's what that is.
Oh, it's Mom's Formula.
Yeah. That's Mom's Formula you got right there. That's a gift for you, by the way.
I thought if I were going to create a formula for anxiety, it would be like this. Oh, well, this is Mom's anxiety. Mom's product. Thank you. I will try it tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it. Now, one of the biggest validations we received thus far is a woman reached out to me. She was actually a survivor from the October 1st shooting in Las Vegas and was suffering from PTSD. And unfortunately, thoughts and prayers weren't doing anything for her. And so she needed something with anti-anxiety properties. And she's like, you know, she reached out and said, I've never used cannabis, but I need to do something to help me out here. And she happened to live not too far from me. So I was like, you know what? Let's meet at a Starbucks somewhere. I'm just going to hand you two jars. One jar is about 1 month.
Of Mom's Formula.
Yeah, exactly. And so I gave her two jars of Mom's Formula. I said, just let me know how it is, and this is on me. Don't worry about it. And she emails me back about 2 months later, and she said, I didn't think it was working until I ran out. And, you know, basically she said that because she did, you know, she hadn't used cannabis before, and she was expecting to get high. Mm-hmm. You don't feel the euphoria in microdosing.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, that anxiety started creeping back in, and it started, you know, I started having trouble sleep again. And so that was some of the biggest validation. And then a couple weeks back, I had the pleasure and honor to be a guest lecturer at UC Davis on the first graduate level course on cannabis. And one of the graduate students actually came up to me and said, I actually use Mom's Formula every day.
Oh, wow.
And he said, I suffer from PTSD. Mm-hmm. And the way he described it was, you know, it used to be historically anxiety was in the driver's seat. And now it's like it's in the passenger seat now with this.
A clinician asked me a question about a PTSD patient who was taking large amounts of CBD, like 25 milligrams four times.
That's a significant amount.
Yeah. And he stopped and had a withdrawal syndrome. And I said, well, gee, I don't know. I said, it makes sense there would be. And a large dose of any psychoactive substance.
Yeah. And it's my understanding that you know, it's not like an opiate where you have a physical withdrawal.
Well, it's a physical withdrawal in the sense that there's a physiological reaction.
Yes.
But it's just more – I forget what they describe. But it wasn't, you know, multi-system stuff the way opiate is. So.
Exactly. It's my understanding – you can get addicted to cannabis the same way you can be addicted to – and once again, here I am talking to an addiction specialist.
Well, cannabis withdrawal definitely is a very characteristic thing.
It's
sleeplessness, paranoia, irritability, all that stuff. It's sort of the opposite of what you were getting when you got the drug.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's my understanding that cannabis addiction is very similar to, you know, food addiction or sex addiction. Where it's more you're addicted to I believe it's my understanding is the serotonin
boost. I mean, it's all biology in the end anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
We're just a bunch of compounds with some water thrown in there. Yeah,
that's all right. So that's why I don't like mincing. You either can stop or you can't.
Yeah.
And that's biology when you can't.
Yeah.
It, so.
One thing we have found that's interesting with cannabis consumption, though, is if you can abstain, you basically reset the default fairly quickly. It seems like.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a whole – you had mentioned that earlier too. There's this syndrome of lessening effect of the drug and often associated with a falling mood.
Yes.
And so people do need to watch that.
Yeah.
It can affect them. I got to wrap this thing up. I could talk to you all day. You know what we should do, Gary, is we should do a call-in show for Rob.
Yeah, that'd be
You know
great.
What I mean? Like set it up ahead, like promote it and say we're going to be taking these. I'm sure there's a million questions for you.
You know, one of the first things I do a lot of consulting. I do a lot of management. One of the first things I always have to tell people is I don't have all the answers.
No, but your experience and you talk from a place of currently available science.
Correct.
That's all I'm looking for.
Exactly.
Because we've been restricted from that and it's insane.
Yes. I mean, so my interest is cultivation science research. And there's only one university in the United States that can do any cultivation research, and that is Ole Miss. And, you know, I had the privilege to speak to the advisory council of the Dean of Ag Sciences at UC Davis. There might be a little bit of nepotism going on at UC Davis, but, you know, I'll take it.
Good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, UC Davis, number one plant science school on the planet, according to U.S. News and World Report, number two for ag science, trying to push cultivation research. And here I am speaking. This happened 2 years ago on April 20th, 420, which is our Christmas in the cannabis world. And here I am speaking to old rice farmers and dairy cattlemen about the low-hanging fruit that is cannabis research. And so UC Davis is moving forward on it. They have applied with the DEA.
You should go over to Caltech where they do a lot of the gene manipulation
stuff. I'm interested in whole plant physiology. Yeah. That's all above me.
Point. They could advise you. Well, you've got the yeast thing coming.
Yeah, exactly. But they are moving forward on it. We definitely need it. I just want to say one thing real quick because it happens to be the day before Thanksgiving. Drew, did you know that today is the second largest day in cannabis purchases in the United States?
No kidding. Well, they call this night Drunksgiving or something, because all the alcohol's up too.
Exactly.
So everyone's
all the pot companies, at least in Southern California, have dubbed this Green Wednesday.
Yeah,
funny. Is that? I've also heard College New Year's Eve or something.
It is because everyone's back in their hometown.
It's become way more of a big party night in the last 5 years or so, right?
Oh, no.
And I think
longer than
10
that.
Years, 15.
Yeah, when I was in college.
It's in the discourse now. Yeah. I'm aware of it, so everyone knows it. So.
Exactly. I think it has a lot to do with people, the stress of dealing with family and things like that.
You know,
And also maybe people
I didn't know cannabis was up to. I knew alcohol was up to. It makes perfect sense.
Well, yeah.
Well, I'm planning to take mom's.
Oh, nice.
Mom's whatever. Mom's formula. But listen, it was a privilege.
Mutual
friend Jenna, we got to thank her for putting us together.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jenna.
Maybe next time Rob's back in town, he can give me a heads up and maybe we'll get him on to do the tail end of an A&D and then
call-in
show.
Sure. Yeah. So you'll do Adam Drew show to get some questions answered from Adam.
Love it.
And then we'll go into some sort of call-in show. So people that are listening, should they maybe email? You?
They can tweet me or tweet at Dr. Drew Podcast or go to drdrew.com and fill out the contact sheet.
You could do the contact sheet, though, we'll go through Susan, and please do fill that out. But I think for the purposes of this call in show that we're going to do whenever you're back in town,
we'll promote it heavily on social in advance.
Yeah,
so people
Twitter. Twitter's
stuff.
The way to do it, I think. So
cool.
And because I don't know enough to know the questions, what I mean? And the people that are thinking about this, using it, involved with it, I'm sure they have a million questions that I couldn't even think of. So
more than happy to answer as many questions as I know the answers to. One of the things that I always like to talk about is cultivation. So if people have questions about, hey, I'm growing in my garage, what do I need to do? I love those types of questions.
But I don't know what to ask about the
– Can I get in one?
Yeah, I asked you. What do you want to ask?
I know. Well, I wasn't until then that I started thinking about it. Is there a company out there that you like – a lot of people like the vape products, but there's a lot of conflicting people out there, from competing companies cutting other people down, saying that they're using the wrong kind of ingredients, the wrong kinds of methods to obtain that liquid. Is there a company out there? A lot of people around these parts are fond of the PAX stuff.
Yep.
Is there anyone out there that you like, or is there one that you for some reason aren't that fond of? I'm not asking you to shit on anyone, but
I love that type of question. One of the things I try to always do is be positive. I won't talk badly about anything, but I will talk positively. My favorite vape pen is from a company called Rove, R-O-V-E. One thing that they do differently is that they don't winterize their oils, which means it's a little bit thicker, but I think it has a better flavor. And it's very effective. And one of the things that they are absolutely adamant about, and the reason why I love them so much, is they are adamant about pesticide-free product, raw materials. And this is when they didn't have to be pesticide-free. This is when they didn't have to, we didn't have the same regulations that we do now. So even when they shouldn't, or they didn't need to do it, they did it. And they did it right. And so a lot of love for Rove. A lot of love for Rove.
Great.
All right,
thank
my friend.
You.
Go to drrobfarms.com. You want to find more information, drrobfarms, and follow him at drrobfarms on Twitter, and we will do this again.
Absolutely.
At your whim, whenever you fit in town, you want to do it.
I grew up here. I'm always a fan. I was born right down the street, so come. These are my old stomping grounds. Love to come back.
All right, Rob. Thanks
Thank
so much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Pleasure.
And we'll see you next time.
for calling times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.
Imagine a world where animals and humans coexist in harmony, where wild animals thrive, habitats are protected, and marginalized communities are empowered. At International Animal Rescue, this is our vision. Our holistic, community-led projects not only rescue animals, but also protect and replenish precious habitats, creating a better future for us all. But we can't do this without you. Show your support now and help keep the wild, wild. Visit internationalanimalrescue.org.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.